previously.tv podcast network.
We're gonna miss you.
Oh, no, you're not, because I'm not going anywhere.
Yes, you are.
Everybody, this is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, season 9, episode 5, Brandon Leaves. Guys, I'm so happy for you. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Batig.
Brandon Walsh.
What?
I love the idea that they called the episode this so that if anyone was flipping through in TV Guide, because it was the past, that they would see that title and be like, oh, I got to watch this one, even though I haven't watched the show in 5 years.
They didn't put the titles in TV Guide.
Yeah, they did.
No,
they did.
They put synopsis in TV Guides.
No, they put titles too.
No, they didn't.
Dave, who are you talking to? Why would you think that you know better than I do about this?
I am going to look it up while you guys talk, because I don't think they did.
They did.
Great.
You buy an ad on this podcast. It's $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message,
$25 if you just want to slag on Tara for a little bit.
Hey, shut up. Go to previously.tv/ads for more information. And now, our C plot: Sophie pursues porn. David, the idiot, goes looking for Sophie at the beach, and why not? Since she was fully squatting there, I guess. Steve blames David for her taking off since they had boned on the internet. And Janet produces a flyer that she's seen up all over town that says, "Where's Sophie?" and a phone number. And while it was obviously hastily made, at least it's not a drawing of Sophie. Donna. Never forget. Moving on. Sophie is in what we were given to understand last week were her pajamas when she meets David at a fancy restaurant. He unfolds the flyer and she's coy about it, but then says she's got a commercial audition off it. And she asks him to come to the audition with her. And he says she scares him. And she's like, boo. And he says he's doing fine without her, but she's not without him. Whatever. And then he kisses her hand. Whatever. Some more. And then he does go to the audition with her, where she tries to check in using her flyer as a headshot. And the receptionist is salty, of course, even after Sophie says the casting director asked for her personally until she pulls out a 50 to get on the list. And David watches her do her short gone with it. And Sophie gloats about getting ahead of everyone else waiting. And he starts lecturing her about jumping herself ahead of them when they're taking classes and working with agents like Mr. Too Good for Jingles is suddenly the king of paying his dues.
Yeah, really.
But his point is that the other auditioners are doing the little things, which is what he terms like taking classes and getting agents, which not either of them are little when you're trying to become an actor. But Sophie's equally stupid answer is that anyone can do the little things. That's why they're little. And in she goes. And so then she's looking bitchy and entitled as she gets professional headshots taken. Apparently failed auditioning for this so bad because she was not wholesome and fresh. And David, standing by, even though he just read her for filth before she walked into the audition, like maybe that was part of why it didn't go well, jerk, tells her to concentrate. And the photographer has to tell her he's taking headshots, not mugshots. And David takes Sophie aside to share his moron wisdom in clip two.
I once did a jingle for hemorrhoid cream.
And this relates to me. How?
It could be worse. You could have gotten the job. Now, I say, when you're done here, we go celebrate your narrow escape from mediocrity.
Fuck you.
What? This is the opposite of the point he was trying to make in the previous scene. Like, this paying your dues by doing so bad is how you move up in the industry. What are you trying to tell her to do? Ugh. So dumb.
Also, is she still here? Really? Really?
Yeah. It's episode five. God. Anyway, when he asks what she asks what he had in mind, and he whispers something dirty that we don't hear, but they'll be going home with her photos. No, they won't. The photographer will have to Photoshop and print them. He goes to the stereo, and instead of the generic screechy guitars of before, it's generic smooth jazz, but it makes her loosen up. And the photographer changes his film and invites them to a party that will be attended by a lot of Hollywood big shots. And then Sophie and Steve have a dumb reunion at the launch party for the store, which we will get to. Sophie is terrible, but Steve doesn't cover himself with glory here either. Clip three.
Well, I'm glad David found you. He was worried about you.
You weren't?
You can handle yourself.
You sound like that's a bad thing.
No, it's just cold.
Is he trying to act like he didn't give her a place to live because he was trying to fuck her? Because that's not the case.
And a job. And the keys to your workplace, you fucking idiot.
And offered her cash for her books. And the list goes on. Like, if he's acting like he wasn't trying to get something transactional out of this relationship, he is not fooling anyone.
Yeah, please. Come on.
Anyway, the fancy party the photographer, whose name is Eric, is taking Sophie to network at is a snooty garden party in the middle of the afternoon. You know, like all fancy Hollywood parties are. Eric points out various luminaries and then offers to introduce her to a director friend of his at the buffet. David makes a friend in clip 4.
I haven't seen Barney's latest. You must play the stallion.
Excuse me?
Well, rumor has it you did 14 love scenes in one day.
Bravo.
Exactly what kind of movies does Barney do?
Oh, you mean you weren't in it?
Let me guess. Barney does porno flicks.
Barney's not a big believer in the written word.
I didn't think so.
Oh, Barney.
Why is there a cocktail pianist at a porno director's afternoon garden party?
I don't know. None of this makes sense. That's really dumb. Over to Eric, though, who's saying that Sophie is a softer Courtney Love or a more accessible Madonna.
What?
The porn director is a tight-skinned creep with a raspy voice, and Sophie says she's up for whatever when David comes over and says they have to go and explains to her as they're leaving that everyone there is a sex worker, basically. Sophie says everyone has to start somewhere, which yesterday was his whole life philosophy, yet David says she's not starting there. Okay, make up your mind. Like, this is not good career advice you're getting from this guy with no career. And at his house, David and Sophie are deciding among her headshot options. She says the director left a message on her service. It was the past.
It was even further in the past than, like, that's some 70s shit right there.
I know. Was she a doctor? Anyway, he has to let her know again that he thinks she can do better, but she feels walls closing in. She's going to need to pay back her student loan as soon as the government figures out she's not actually a student. Again, don't understand how this loan works. David tells her for the 500th time to be patient and wait for her non-naked chance. She thinks she should have made it by now, despite the fact she's only been there for, I'm going to say, a maximum of 4 weeks. Like, really? Anyway, the next day, Sophie makes David drive her somewhere, but says it's a surprise, and she's put up a Where's Sophie billboard on Sunset. David's horrified face at the sight of this is pretty funny. You can see it in the visual aids. And he's like, I thought you didn't have any money. And she says she doesn't, but the guy who sold her the space doesn't know that yet. Pretty sure you can't get that space on COD either, but I've never tried to put up a billboard. She says she's taking his advice by not settling, because if the flyer got her a commercial audition, what might this get her? Ridicule like Angeline? Just a thought. But David says,
are you Amanda Palmer? Settle down.
David says it's not conventional, and she gets in his lap and says she's not a conventional girl, and that it's cute how he worries about her, but he doesn't have to because she's going to make it. And then she's like, look at me, and he does, but she moves his chin because she means look at her on the billboard, and it's kind of creepy, but actually one of the few, like, character notes that makes sense in the storyline that she would be that narcissistic. But he kisses her on the side of the head because now I guess it's adorable to him. And at the Peach Pit After Dark later, David says he should have told Steve about him and Sophie. David asks what if this is payback. No idea what that means. David makes one of his less seen punchable faces, which you can see in the visual aids, before Steve asks if David likes Sophie. And David says not enough to blow a friendship. Steve doesn't want to blow a friendship either. And a manly hug is had. So at least this part of it is over. Thank God.
Ugh.
On to our B plot.
Before we get
Noah,
to the B plot, I have an important announcement to make.
Oh,
TV
God,
Guide
yes?
does not have episode titles in it.
Currently or in the past?
Contemporary to this show. At least not in the '70s, not in the '80s, and not in the '90s.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, well, there isn't, however, a big ad for Cop Rock.
Oh, Cop Rock.
Every once in a while, a TV show comes along that's truly extraordinary. Some people won't try it because it's so different. But give it a shot. It could turn you on like nothing else on television. Cop Rock. The best new series of the 90-91 season, says Chicago Sun-Times.
Oh, my God.
Incorrect.
Accompanying this ad, nowhere on the page, episode titles.
Okay.
Please present your apologies.
I apologize.
Sarah?
There's also an ad for, no, no, not yet. You got to wait for it. Okay. There's also Once Upon a Time in TV Guide, an ad that instead of using a photo was, a la Donna, a drawing of my husband, Dan, coming in a window as his character on Loving to stalk Noel Beck's character on the soap opera. They drew him.
Climbing in a window.
What did I say?
Coming. Sorry.
Not in those tight pants.
Listen, I don't know what was happening in soap operas in those days. They also could have stopped that Cop Rock commercial or the ad copy after calling it just extra rather than finishing it as extraordinary. Anyway, well, on to the B plot. Val and Noah do some dead dad bonding. So Matt is doing a crossword and expositing that he applied to and got rejected by Yale when Val enters and introduces herself as a friend of Donna and Kelly's. And he's all casual and friendly until she says they don't know she's there and she doesn't want them to. And he says they won't, but I guess she better hope he doesn't clip a snapshot of her to the outside of her file and leave it somewhere. And she does the classic TV move of giving him a dollar as she says she wants to hire him. And he says their conversation is officially privileged until she tells him, unless she tells him that she's going to kill someone. But it's not that she's going to, it's that she already did. And she catches him up on all the stuff we already know. Now the story is that she resisted him, her dad. He took out a gun, they struggled over it, and he died. And this happens, clip 5.
It was justifiable homicide.
Well, so you say, but a court may say different.
Well, I don't see how.
Sure you do, or you wouldn't be here.
So what do you say I should do?
Hope your mother will stay quiet and protect you.
If she doesn't?
If she doesn't, hope for a sympathetic jury.
What?
Yeah, I'm starting to see why Matt's not at the fancy law firm anymore. If his advice, his legal advice boils down to, well, hope nothing happens. Like,
yeah.
Anyway.
I have a further update for you. The TV guys of the 2000s also do not have TV episode titles.
Okay. No.
Duly noted.
Mm-hmm. Do I have to apologize again? I already apologized.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
Thank you.
Noah shows up at the store. Donna is stiff and weird with him, and Noah is cold to Matt when he brings in a box. And Matt asks if Donna's sure there's nothing else he can do, and Noah tries to be a big man and immediately gets put in his place in clip 6.
She said no.
Started the court-appointed classes yet?
The A meetings. Next week.
Look, I know it's hard.
You have no idea.
Neither do you. Shut up.
Yeah, you haven't gone yet. Also, we're going to find out in the next episode you're still a drunk, so whatever. Noah is sorry that Donna didn't get him to help her, and she says she would like him to come and see them put up the sign the next day, which he says he will. He also wants to do something with her tonight. She would like that too, except it seems like he keeps running away from her and it hurts. He knows it does, but he promises not to run tonight, which 100% means he will run. So then Val stalks Abby to the lobby of her hotel to confront her about not returning her calls. And honestly, the best proof that Abby isn't going to do anything is that she's still in town. But for now, all she'll say is that she's going to think about it, and then takes Val to the side of a pillar so that they can discuss which one of them is a murderer in this extremely busy public place in clip 7.
You killed your father.
He was abusing
me. You sleep with my husband.
I know that was
stupid.
You
put me in the position that no mother should be put in, that of deciding your fate. You're damn right I'm going to think.
You're going to turn me in, aren't you?
I don't know.
Of course you're going to turn me in. I told you I don't know. You say that, but I know what's true.
Don't press me for an answer, Valerie. You may not like what you hear.
Ugh. Why is she still in Los Angeles?
I don't know. But I love
how... Where is Carl? What is going on? Why won't it stop?
Carl, like, finally did get the message and just fucked off to never have anything to do with
his family. This family is bullshit. Bye.
Ugh. Yeah, I guess. Anyway. Then Noah and Donna are in bed where it seems like we missed about 50 steps that got them there. But anyway, she has her back to him as she says it doesn't feel right for him to be there. And he says she wants him to be over his father, but he's not. She knows, but he doesn't try to make her understand what he's feeling. It's like walking on quicksand where each step makes him sink deeper. She doesn't know what that feels like, but can imagine it's pretty awful, she says. And he says she can't possibly understand and gets up to leave. And he's already getting dressed as she begs him not to go and he'll call her later. And this is stupid, but at the same time, if Noah's point is that Donna doesn't have the sensitivity or the emotional range to understand his grief, like, I kind of believe that's true. She is an idiot.
Well, and she just is like, you know, you need to talk about it. Like, well, yeah, but it's not going to be one conversation and then everything's all better. Like,
right.
If he doesn't want to talk about it, he doesn't. Break up with him then.
Yeah. So the next day, Noah doesn't show up for the sign unveiling, which is just as well because the name is stupid. We will get to it in our next storyline.
And it's another like multi-font fun affair.
Ugh, we'll get to
awful.
It.
Awful.
We'll get to it. Kelly says that if Noah keeps pushing Donna away, Donna will have to let him go. And in his office at the Peach Pit After Dark, Noah's already drinking at 10 a.m. and vaguely remembering he was supposed to go do some bullshit with Donna. And Val, who does not care, says that Donna will understand. Noah's mother just called and asked if he wouldn't mind lying about how his father died, because she's all about appearances. Val says that her mother is the same, trying to sell the story that she left Carl. To whom? Who is she even talking to? She's in L.A. where she does not live. Like, what is... Anyway, dumb. Noah asks why Carl took off, and Val says she can't say, and when pushed, says she can't and won't. And Noah says Donna can't possibly understand what he's going through. And Val says that Donna's lucky not to understand. And suddenly there's something Noah needs Val to see. And wisely, she will not let him drive. And so, as we keep complaining, where Noah is taking Val is to the house, now for sale, actually in escrow, where his father said he'd never amount to anything. Even though Noah was always from back east, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Noah did not grow up in this house.
No, he didn't. Also, houses do not go into escrow after like 2 weeks after the principal owner's death. It just does not happen. Sorry.
No.
And then it's like half empty.
Yeah.
And it looks like where they filmed in the third season of Project Greenlight. Like it's a lot and none of it's good.
No. But even though Noah was, as far as we know, only in this house for the very first time when he took Donna there for dinner, apparently his dad said that Noah was a disappointment in every room of it, which might be true. I can imagine him taking a tour and stopping everywhere to be like, oh, you still suck. Anyway,
just a reminder. No.
Yeah. So even though half the furniture is gone, this booze is still there, which Noah busts into as he tells Val he's there looking for a way to erase all the memories. And Val wants to toast to forgetting the past, but she's not hard like Noah. Man, clip 9.
No, that's too wimpy. It's suicide. Most hostile thing a human being can do.
After murder.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
I'd take my word for it.
You could, couldn't you?
What makes you think I haven't?
You almost got me. That's good. What makes you think I haven't? A piece of work, Val. You know that? We really are.
Again.
We get it.
With the ad-libbing. Please no. So then Noah finds Donna at the Peach Pit to suck at her some more in clip 10.
Like I should have called.
I know you're going through a really... terrible thing right now. I do. But I need you to give something back. Anything, something, and I need you to do it now.
If I can't?
You have to.
Say goodbye for me. Get out of here.
I mean, like, again, one of many instances in which it's like, this is a legitimate avenue to explore for an adult, not adult, but you know what I mean, for a drama. But this is a soap, and it's like, all right, just break up then. Like, why is Donna's battle with his grief still going on? It's like the third episode of this.
I don't know. I can't justify it. So no. Abby comes to find Val at the Peach Pit to tell Val she's not going to report her, but also that she doesn't forgive Val and would, were she a stronger person, totally turn her in. But it was hard enough to deal with the shame of her father's suicide when she thought that's what it was. And she doesn't need everyone also knowing that he was, you know, molesting their daughter. And then Val is mad about her keeping her secret. Like, bitch, consider the alternative. Like, what, you want to try to fight this out in court when the last legal advice you got was like, you probably would lose? Anyway, she doesn't want
Abby. Would she, though? Because the cops apparently found absolutely nothing suspicious about the fact that, like, you know,
right,
he was in the bathroom and the gun went out or whatever the story was. Like, it worked. You got away with it.
Yeah. I don't know. So she doesn't want Abby to go to the cops, but she does want to stop feeling lonely and dirty and afraid. She wants closure, and Abby isn't giving it to her. And by night outside the store, Donna calls Noah, gets his machine, and pouts. And we see Noah's back at his parents' ex-home, where he has started a fire in the fireplace, and he smashes a framed photo of his father against the wall and throws a book on the fire and feels pain. And Donna's moping at a cafe table outside the store when Matt comes down and asks her for a drink, and she'll take it. And I guess these two are the ones that are being pushed toward each other and get on with it. So we do have one more storyline, but first we have a birthday message for Fred from Tasha.
Fred is turning 40 this week, and since Tasha can't be there in person, she's asked us to make Fred smile. It's going to be tough to top Brandon's departure in that department, but we've still put together a list of five other Freds who might have improved the zip had they been part of the Bev Niner cast.
Number one, Fred Willard, because with a mockumentary veteran on the case, maybe some of the stuff the writers inflict on us / the cast might actually get over.
Number two, Fred Gwynn, because wardrobe won't stop with the XXXXXXL pants, so casting should step up with Herman Munster, who might actually fit into them.
Number three, Hunter's Fred Dreyer, who as a former NFL player could participate in a keg house flag football game without running like a weirdo, Brandon.
Number four, Fred Wilpon, because nobody's going to fit seamlessly into an entire peer group of small business dingleberries with no goddamn idea what they're doing, like the majority owner of the hapless cheapskate suckfest that is the New York Mets. Oh, wait, this isn't supposed to be depressing. Sorry, let's go with Fred Schneider of the B-52s instead. He seems fun.
Number five, Fred Grandy, who could go for the entire cast out to the Love Boat and then sink it.
Fred, Tasha would like you to know that you're awesome. I would like you to know that I am sorry for braying about the Mets.
No, you're
and
not.
We would, oh, you're right. I'm not. And we would all like to wish you
happy birthday, Fred!
D.D. McCall.
Thank you, Dave. And on at long, 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 long last. You are a plot. Brandon leaves and Kelly is a bitch about it and in general. So Brandon is cock walking up to the beach apartment door for the last time.
Brandon Vosh is cock of nothing.
That's true. Up to the beach apartment door to blow Kelly's mind with joy at the sight of him. But Donna opens the door before he can knock and hustles past him because they're loading into the store and no one has time for his shit. And it's great. This is the first he's heard that the store is even happening, which I know the feeling because it makes no sense. And the opening is tomorrow. This is also where Brandon learns there is a Matt and where we learn that Kelly's doubts about his character were not so grave that they stopped her letting him set up their corporation. Kelly also has a meeting with Leah. Brandon wants to know about her, but Kelly's in too much of a hurry and perfunctorily asks how New York was. And he says they should talk about it, and she tries to put it off, but there is no putting off Brandon in clip 11.
Later's fine. I can always tell you later. I was offered a job in the Washington Bureau of a major metropolitan newspaper.
You were?
She's pretty much the worst in this episode, except for these moments when she's like, her?
Yeah. Yes. Trying to get rid of Brandon is Kelly at her best, for sure.
Mm.
He says they want him to start right away, and she says it's great and asks him to help her to her car. And Brandon says, as if to a child, that he's going to move. And she's like, yeah, I know. She thinks it's a good thing for him. It's definitely a good thing for all of us. And then Brandon has lunch with Steve at the Peach Pit. Where else? Nat already heard about the job. Brandon jokes about how good it'll be for his arteries to be across the country from a mega burger. And when Steve has no empathy for him since the paper is putting him up in a hotel for 2 weeks while he finds a place. LOL, OL, OL, OL. Nat reveals what else he already knows in clip 12.
You better make sure he gives you the same deal while you look.
Am I looking?
I called my parents and they want to sell the house.
Yeah, well, sure, it's their house.
I feel badly.
With you moving, it's only natural.
I'll call them again.
Well, I was thinking about moving out anyway.
You were?
Yeah, so there's not a problem or anything.
You feel badly?
Thank you.
Chronicler.
Yeah, it's one thing when Kelly says she feels badly for Noah, which she did in the last episode, but she's not an editor.
No.
Anyway.
Also, you don't feel badly or bad. You're like making that same, you know, I just ate a tasty marijuana bug face that you make in every scene where you're not giving us the concern brows because you don't give a shit anymore and you just want to leave. So go.
Yeah, seriously. So Kelly is also at this time at her meeting with Leah at the Peach Pit, showing why it's maybe a good thing Kelly is getting out of the fake social work business.
Leah, if he was abusing you, why did you go back to him? I found out that I was pregnant. You must have freaked. I was done with Lenny. Thanks to you, I'd moved on. And you felt like you had to go back. For a while, everything was great. Lenny was sweet and kind. And Allison, she's so perfect. But about a month ago, Lenny and I got into a fight about late night feedings, changing our typical stuff. Except that he hit you. And when I told him that I wanted sole custody in the divorce. Which I'm sure you'll get. He said that if I take his baby girl away from him, that he'll kill me.
Don't ever ask a person who's a domestic abuse survivor why they went back to their abuser.
What the fuck? That's the absolute worst. From her.
Never, never do that. I mean, people who are not psychology graduates know this. Like, I mean, it's not like we need more evidence that Kelly fucking sucks, but Jesus Christ. Like, that.
Well, and then
terrible.
The show doubles down by being like, thanks to you, I almost got out.
Yeah.
Ugh. Fuck you. And then she's like, then Leah reveals that she went back because she got pregnant and whatever. Very common. Rationale for trying to work things out in these situations, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Kelly's like, you must have freaked. Like, she didn't fuck up her prom manicure. She's pregnant with her baby with her abusive husband. Like, could someone in the writer's room please have a tone check every, I don't know, couple of episodes and make sure you're not being gross and weird?
Yeah. Bleh.
Especially Kelly. Here is the downside of Brandon leaving is that she is now going to be the sole worst and it's bad. She's terrible.
Also, this baby is not 3 months old. This baby is minimum 7 months old.
Yeah.
It is giant. And also, you know what really makes this the perfect setting to discuss an abused woman's fears for her own life? The fucking doo-wop music in the background.
And then Matt is also there. Like, I have so many questions. Like, why is Abby still in LA? Mm-hmm. Why is Matt at the Peach Pit? Like, just run into him at your new fatigue.
Yeah.
Why do the Hunters still have an LA mansion?
Why did they ever have one?
Why does Donna still have the same sheets that she had freshman year? Like, of all characters, I do not buy it. Why? Why is this happening to us, Tara and Dave?
I don't know.
And why didn't I'm still TV thinking Guide about have doo-wop, episode titles?
Doo-wop domestic abuse music. Like Shauna Na comes in and like messes shit up.
Who put the bop in the bop, shoo-bop, shoo-bop.
Oh, who put the beat in the sorry? Kelly's setting up her stupid store when Brandon comes back to say he's impressed, but in the most condescending possible tone, of course. And they have a very dumb, passive-aggressive conversation about the choices each has made without the other's input, as though they did not break up, which they did. And then Lenny storms in because he knows she saw Leah and orders Kelly to stay away from her. And Kelly tells him to leave. And when he doesn't, tiny Brandon grabs his arm and repeats, "I think the lady told you to leave, and toxic masculinity is a scourge, but this is at best food poisoning masculinity if we're going to rate this on a spectrum."
Oh my God, it's so good. He's like, clearly, it's like the fight in Rocky IV, like,
yeah.
Stallone standing on a box. Yeah.
He's up to this guy's shoulder. You can see this in the visual aids. Lenny leaves so that they can fight some more about their apparently inescapable bullshit. And then we find out that Brandon is saying goodbye to LA by being a terrible, unethical journalist one last time in clip 13.
But it is a fact that Lenny hit Leah at least once.
I told you I don't discuss pending cases. Besides, I thought your article was about custody battles in general.
But it's... But after I talked with Kelly, I thought the Leah Lenny case may be a good hook.
I didn't know you were friends with Kelly.
Gross. Didn't I mention that?
No. Anyway, about the article...
And she didn't mention me?
No. But if you have any other
Nothing
questions...
Nothing about a recent breakup?
I mean, okay, first of all, I thought that this couple's probably fatal to Leah if she doesn't leave marriage might be a good hook.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Why is this like, you didn't mention a recent breakup? Boop up, shabam. Like, why are you playing this like it's a fucking Rat Pack bit? It's weird.
And again, with the 50s music in the background. Yeah.
Shamalama ding dong.
So Val interrupts to ask Brandon about the house and decline to tell him what she's got going on right now, which we've already been through, so we will not revisit it. Donna and Kelly have named their stupid store Now Wear This, which is only a successful play on words if you don't know how to pronounce either wear or here. I hate this store name so much.
And the store itself, I mean, you will see it in the visual aids, but oof, it's, yuck.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
And Donna's still terrified about all of it. And Brandon later yanks Kelly away on the day her store is opening to tell her about the story he's doing on outrageous custody battles, which she sees through in terms of his motivation for same. He then tells her she looks great. She tells him to quit it. He's going to do the story. Does she want to help? He asks. She does not and goes to leave. And he brays that this isn't easy on him. And she knows it doesn't mean he has to make it hard on her. Like, look who has boundaries all of a sudden. It's a miracle. Ugh. And Matt also comes to the launch party to tell Kelly he told Lenny never to come into the store, but it's not enough. She also wants him to fire Lenny as a client. And he doesn't say that he will. And Donna and Kelly give a brief speech encouraging everyone to shop and spread the word while Brandon stands outside looking through the glass like a straight up murderer, which you can see in the visual aids.
It's yeah. I kind of want to murder both Kelly's hair and Donna's hair and her like giant Kelly's giant mittany platform slides. It's just the late 90s-est situation. There's also a square neck slip dress. You will see.
Yes, it does seem like maybe during this period they were trying to cover up the Cleavern a little bit because it feels like a while since we've seen it.
Yeah, there is it's visible in this episode, but there's like a netting. There's like an illusion top over, which is like what everyone was doing then, like strappy tank top and then like a netting long sleeve shirt over it. So the Cleavern is visible, but like behind a screen at least. Thank God. Yeah.
So Steve is nicer than I am as he comes to stand next to Brandon while Brandon stalks Kelly and gives this monologue.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go.
Clip 14.
So I'm the new guy, right? Fresh off the bus from Hicksville. And it's the first day of school. And I keep telling myself, be cool. Just be cool. So what happens? I enter the main hall right before class, so everybody's there, and I trip. Total swan dive. Books go flying. I cut my chin. People are standing up, holding up pieces of paper. 6.9s across the board, thank you very much.
I remember.
And just when I'm about to put my tail between my legs, run back home to beg Jim and Cindy to put me on the next bus back to Minneapolis, Donna comes over to me, introduces herself, and thanks me for putting everyone at ease. And then for the rest of the day, she takes me around and introduces me to everyone as Greg Louganis.
Oh, man, Brad, I remember that. Boy, did she ever save your butt, though.
Actually, it was a save by committee. Dylan, Kelly, and surprisingly, even you. It made me feel right at home.
None of that happened.
None of, we have footage, demonstrably untrue, fake news. None of it happened. And also, like, he didn't meet Dylan for like 3 episodes.
Yes, Dylan's not in the pilot at all.
We did not see this fall. Donna would never make that joke is dumb. Louganis didn't fall on his chin. I guess the reference is to a dive, but even a bad joke is not one that Donna would have made. And also, in the pilot, she was just some, like, floozy who was drinking mango mamaritas or whatever the fuck Steve was making in the episode where Brandon drove drunk. Never forget. Mm-hmm. None of this. Why? Who is this for?
Like, yeah, do the people who were writing on the show at this time not know that the show started when they were in high school? Because you could just go back and watch that episode. There's probably a tape of it somewhere in the office. Like, I know you couldn't go hit up Hulu at this time, but Jesus Christ, none of that happened.
And no mention of Brenda either, by the way.
Right. No, why would there be?
No.
So Steve says he's found a place to live and has barely gotten wistful about what they had at the beat when Brandon announces,
I'm staying.
Oh, no, you're not.
No.
No, you are not.
We already changed the locks. Get the fuck out.
He doesn't know the episode title because it wasn't in TV Guide. Steve admits that he would like it if Brandon did, but doesn't know why he would. Brandon says, this is home. Ugh. And then at some point, Kelly apparently changed her mind about Brandon's opportunistic story because she's at the beat with him as he asks Leah whether she ever had an affair. She did, because her husband was beating her, she says. And as for Lenny's claims of substance abuse on her part, she says they're not true. Hey, does Leah have a lawyer who might explain to her why it's not a good idea for her to participate in this extremely biased story about a currently ongoing court case?
/ impose a gag rule on Kelly?
Yeah.
Hello?
But Kelly appreciates Brandon's efforts, whether or not she did the day before, and she can't figure out why he's staying in L.A. And in response, he gets in what we may dearly hope is his last bray of the series in clip 16.
Why is it so hard for everyone to believe that what I want is right here?
Because it's not, and we both know that.
You want everything to move forward. I want everything to stop.
Brandon, take the job. If you don't, you're going to regret it.
Look, Leah's waiting, and I got a lot of work to do.
What are you so scared of?
I really have a lot of work to do.
Whatever, dude.
God.
So, Kelly's at home just chilling at night when Brandon grabs her and yanks her out to the beach so he can do what he's always been afraid of. Night swimming, which I guess is their euphemism for skinny dipping because we later see his butt. But he talks her into doing it too somehow. And Donna's locking up the store when Matt comes down and offers to walk her to her car. And she says she's fine. And he's like, are you? And when she tells him she was in an abusive relationship, I guess the writers have proved that they watched at least back to season 5, but not earlier. And her point is that she doesn't approve of his representing Lenny, though she doesn't get to it because his point is that his parents got divorced when he was a kid. And then his mother moved him away and he never got to see his father, which is partly on your dad. But OK, fine.
Yeah, really.
So on the beach post-swimming, there's boring beach talk. Brandon claims he saw a shark. Kelly's scared of the unknown. He's scared of the tide sucking him out. Kelly says it's not going to happen.
He's Brandon teeny. Finds- it could.
It really could. Kelly says that's not going to happen. Brandon finds adult responsibility overrated, but she says they are adults and have to grow up sometime. And he apologizes for not being a good enough friend to let her move on. And it's actually the first time I think he has sounded sincere, saying he's sorry about anything. But then he goes up, back out for another dip. She's really proud of him. And there's this weird camera jog, which I made a gif of. You can see in the visual aids, like he gets up and it sort of like jitters over to her. It's very
It was so weird. I'm so glad that you clipped that, because it's like, and they just didn't cut it out, like, or retake it. Oh my God. It's, it's very odd. Even the camera people don't care anymore.
Yes. And in the long shot, you can see that he's wearing like the butt version
nude
of a cock sock, like
a
crack sack. I don't know what that would be, but whatever. Get out of here. Like, hurry up and go. So Brandon has let Steve take him to a party to celebrate the Beat's first anniversary, which, of course, is a going away party for Brandon. Brandon is still pretending he's not going anywhere, and everyone is basically like, get out. And Val says Brandon will be her guardian angel no matter where he is, and everyone else is like, don't be scared, or in other words, clip 17.
So what you're all saying is get the hell out of here, right?
Pretty much.
So get out.
And so he's like, I better go see if I still have a job, because apparently he was so serious about staying that he turned it down. But for some reason, Matt is also at the party, despite having met Brandon 2 days ago, and tells Kelly he thought Brandon's article was very fair. And she thinks it was too fair, which is a hilariously Kelly thing to say slash not possible. But Matt says Lenny has rights. She doesn't give a fuck in clip 18.
I'm not interested in Lenny's rights. I'm interested in his child's rights. And I'm telling you now, you better protect that baby.
Or what?
Yeah.
You'll strangle him to death with your cat butt mouth? Stay out of it.
Wait. Meow.
There it is.
See? Butt meow. Come on.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sure. No, it's good.
It's good.
Thanks. Nice bit of business.
Thanks. So Brandon is, he says, good at groveling. No evidence of that. And got the job back. Kelly says she has no regrets. He doesn't either. They hug. Get out!
I also, he's going to the East Coast, not Bahrain. There is email. Yeah, he could set up a little webcam and you could watch him braying at other people.
Yeah. Ugh. So Brandon somehow talked his stupid parents into letting Steve stay in the house as long as he wants it, and has let Noah know that he can live there too. Still don't know where Noah's been living in the time since he supposedly sold the boat.
The drunk tank.
Seriously. Steve wants Brandon to steal him stuff from the White House, and they get a tiny bit maudlin at the door, but, you know, they're men. And before they can hug or something, we cut to the Peach Pit after dark, where David is using his radio show, which he's had for like a week, to say goodbye to Brandon, someone none of his listeners know and don't give a fuck about, but this is Brandon's farewell, clip 19.
Goodbye, Brandon. 9 years. It's a long time for a group to hang out. High school, college, the real world. Death, drugs, depression. Raging hormones, puberty. You name it, we've suffered through it all. Still are.
Yep.
Some people have moved away.
Oh my God.
And others have joined. It hasn't really mattered, though. Reason being, we know we can depend on each other. We know we always will.
Oh, that just kept going.
Yeah.
Also, he's not dying. Also, spoiler, that bitch does not come back for your wedding. Sorry.
Really? I was about to say, he seems like the one who would come back, like he's another Gabrielle Carteris, but guess
not. There's
you
guys ever see the video movie link up?
You guys ever see the movie Top Secret?
Yeah.
Sure.
There's a scene where the female lead is going on about everything that's happened during your absence. And stock markets fluctuate, blah, blah, blah. This went longer than the comedy version of that.
Yeah, it did.
Well, bye, fucko. No one's going to miss you. We hate your guts. So let's name our...
ended up happening with him at the Chronicle. I'm sure he arrived and they're like, internet, we're downsizing. Bye. And he's living in a box under the Williamsburg Bridge. I hope.
Well, he goes to DC, so it's whatever bridge is in DC.
Who cares? Bye.
Who indeed? Let's name our episode MVP. Brandon for leaving fucking finally.
The editor at the Washington Bureau of the New York Chronicle. Like, why? Why can't it just be the Washington Chronicle, you shitheads? Whoever hired him, thank you for removing him from our lives.
Indeed. Least valuable player.
I think we can all agree it's probably Doo-Wop.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Brandon,
so many choices.
I mean, not really. Kelly's worse, but it's his last episode. So now and forever, Brandon.
Yeah, I'm going to say Lenny for giving Brandon an opportunity to try and throw his tiny weight around and be a big man one last time. We also have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
Brooke Zellwin on Twitter writes, I saw that Jason Priestley volunteers at Ronald McDonald House in Canada. 5 ways Brandon would not be helpful to parents of kids in the hospital. Well, he'd try to yell the illness out of them. That would probably be one.
He's very tiny and they might mistake him for their kids when they're visiting.
When he's doing his cock walk around a hospital room, he might accidentally kick out a cord with his knee.
I have one.
Please.
Just when he's supposed to do his job at Ronald McDonald House, he says he's going to go get a job at Gurgle McBurger King House.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. And I think the last one is that he violates everyone's HIPAA protections by writing stupid Beverly Beat cover stories about them that nobody cares about because Kelly asked him to.
That makes 5.
Oh my God, everyone within the sound of my voice, we did it. Unfortunately, the rage that we have traditionally felt will now be replaced by aggressive boredom. Next time on Again With This, Valerie finally decides she's had enough of the Zip and all its asshole inhabitants. Sophie finally decides she can do better than David, and Leah finally decides to leave Lenny with the quote-unquote help of St. Kelly's artisanal underground bitch road for a single victim of domestic violence. You'll be a victim of retinal scarring when you check out our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I am Demonstrably False First Season Retcon, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Outrageous Custody Battle, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And I was going to call our producer the Chronicle Chronicle, but obviously he's DV Doo-Wop, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.